Previously on Masterclass, we had Gina Cordero talk about how she took the road less traveled in getting settled in America. Some great insights were shared, and this has prompted me to continue this by talking about another aspect of the American dream. Hello, I'm George, and this is your Masterclass. In this episode, it's episode 12 already, we'll be talking to someone who moved to the United States some years back. She is a nurse, the common profession of a lot of Filipinos in the world. In fact, a lot of nurses in the Philippines are now making a beeline for the recruiting companies to apply for available jobs in the United States and other countries. This episode can help guide them in their search for better opportunities. Our guest today is Pia de Ungria from Los Angeles in California. Hello, Pia.
Hey, George, how are you? Thanks so
I'm
much.
I'm great,
for
thank
me.
You. Okay, very good. All right, Pia, let's get down to business. You are in Los Angeles now. What do you do in LA?
I am a surgery nurse in LA. I've been a surgery nurse here since 2016 when I finally got my license to practice here.
All right. Okay. Let's go back. Let's backtrack a little bit. What is your background? Were you a nurse here in the Philippines? Of course, you took up nursing, but were you a nurse here?
Yes, I graduated in 2002. That was like a long time ago in the Royal Pontifical University of Santo Tomas.
All right.
I was a nurse there too for a period of time. And I've been doing a lot of odd jobs here and there so that I could support my family when I was in the Philippines. But still, in my heart of hearts, I was a nurse. But here was when I experienced a full-blown nurse person that I am now.
Okay. So you practiced nursing in the Philippines before you got there, or you were in another field?
I was doing both, to be
honest. Right.
I was also in other fields. And that's how I met you. But let's talk about that.
Sometime, probably in another time. Anyway, so what prompted you to go to the United States?
You know, it was something that has always been, like, I guess, a future that I already knew was going to happen. I took up nursing because I really didn't know what I wanted to be when I was going to go to college. They all suggested that I become a nurse, and I said, sure, why not? I don't know what I wanted to be. I didn't know what I wanted to be. So I took it up. That was 1998. I graduated 2002, and then it just led me to where I was. And my aunts, I knew for them, they're nurses here in the United States too, here in California. And they were the ones who told me to apply here. They were the ones who sent me to different, back then, I think that they were recruiters who were petitioning immigrant visa for all of the nurses in the Philippines. But that was right around 2004, 2005. And then things happened. I think there was retrogression and recession, global economic recession at that time. So I didn't get the chance to be here until 10 years after the original petition. So,
yeah. And when you got there, you already had a contract, a job waiting for you.
Correct.
Very good. Isn't there a glut of nurses there? I mean, you know, a lot of Filipinos. There must be millions of nurses in the United States, the Filipinos.
Oh, my God. Definitely. Yes. Uh-huh. In my department alone, there's like five more Filipino nurses. Everywhere you go, every department you go to, when I float around other departments, there are Filipino nurses. There are Filipino LVNs. There's just Filipinos everywhere in the healthcare profession.
Yeah, I know for a fact, like Johns Hopkins, you know, hospital in Baltimore, for instance, they don't even get recruiters anymore. The management of Johns Hopkins comes to the Philippines to interview the applicants. Just goes to show you how they respect Filipino nurses. Now, with so many Filipino nurses there, how does one stand out and how does one advance in her career?
You know, George, I really would like to believe, to be honest, in my heart of hearts, I believe that healthcare is healthcare. And it's a universal principle, you know. Doctors would study the same thoughts, the same processes, the same disease processes. And that's the same thing that I will study wherever I am. That's the same thing I studied when I was in college. It's the same things that people here would study theories of nursing and all that. It's pretty universal. But I feel that what sets people apart really is communication. It's your knowledge of language and wherever you would like to practice at. And it's supremely important. In so many ways, I would come to like talking to patients, talking to doctors, and they would be surprised at how I spoke English. And I guess they're kind of used to how Filipinos speak English. And I don't mean to belittle Filipinos, but there's a certain way Filipinos speak. And when I tell them that I haven't been in the United States for a long time, they'd be surprised to to hear or to find out that, well, I was not born and raised here, because that's usually the presupposition that they have in their heads. So it's communication for me.
And let me ask you, where did you learn how to speak that way? Like you said, you don't really have what you might call a regional accent. Would you call it that? I don't even detect a tinge of that. How did you learn how to speak that way?
Thanks, George. I think that it would root back from where I when I was in. I guess when I was a kid, to be honest, I started. I remember being raised by my grandmother watching mostly American TV shows like MacGyver, Falcon Crest, Knots Landing, Dynasty, Golden Girls, those things. And then I grew up reading a lot of books like Nancy Drew and stuff like that. And then you were my trainer. That's how we kind of met. In a place where I was forced to speak English. And I think that you might have remembered me as that person who refused to speak English.
You were quite hard-headed that time. I guess you still are now, right?
Yes. It's part of my personality to be stubborn. But yeah, I was like, no, I'm not going to speak English. But I eventually... It's not that I hated it, but I eventually loved it. I loved the language so much that I just kept using it. It just came out so naturally for me.
So if you were to be asked what advice you'd give those nurses who are intending, not only nurses, but healthcare workers, professionals who are intending to work there, you would advise them to polish up their communication skills, right?
Yes, definitely. It's really something, especially if you would like to work in a country where English is mostly spoken. Well, if you want to go to Japan, then start studying Japanese. If you want to go to, say, Spain or France or wherever else, start studying the language. But for the most part, if you're going to work abroad, you know that English is the first thing that people would look at. English is the first language that a lot of people would use almost universally. And it's really important. I'm not saying that they should not focus on the theories and the nursing practice itself, but they have to take it in their heart that English is a reality that they must start, I guess, I wouldn't say perfecting, but it's something that they should start polishing at a very early stage if they really want to be competitive. I'm sure that a lot of the Filipinos here are very, very good nurses. I don't deny that. You see the compassion. You see the way they take care of their patients. But oftentimes, that does not translate so well just because of, you know, the lack of communication, the lack of rapport. It's something that we used to talk about a lot, but rapport is supremely important. It's language that brings you there.
Language barrier, in other words, right?
Correct.
Okay. Let's go down to specifics. Like, tell us. A lot of people are intending to go to the United States right now, or to other countries, since the government has recently opened up the restrictions they had before. So health professionals, healthcare professionals are now free to apply for jobs abroad. And if you were to be asked, what sort of route would they take? What kind of route did you take? Like, tell us from the very beginning, how did you apply? Of course, your answer there. But did you apply in the Philippines first for a job there in the United States? Tell us all about that story and the timeline.
Yeah, I did. I can't remember for the life of me which recruitment it was, but basically I went there. I gave them my papers. But before that, I already had my CGFNS, which was back then a requirement. Back then, at least. I don't know, because I hear that it depends on which state you're going to practice. But this was, like, again, a long time ago. This was 10 years, more than, no, oh my God, 15 years ago. George, I'm old. It was like more than 15 years ago. I took up CGFNS. I had, I took the IELTS examination.
Yes, English, that's very important.
I had, correct. I had to have my visa screen. At the time that I was applying, I told them that I was about to get my NCLEX examination, which is the equivalent for our register for our what do you call PRC?
Yes, that's right. Like professional regulation, right?
Correct. So I took that and I passed. And at that point,
where did you take your NCLEX in Guam?
No, I actually took it in Makati. This was a long time ago.
It was being offered in Makati, huh?
Yep. Then it was in Buendia. I can't remember. Was it RCBC building, even something like that? I can't remember really, that long ago. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Anyway, took the NCLEX, and basically I waited for a long time until maybe around 2012, 2013, that finally immigration sent me a letter again saying that, oh, you have this pending visa, like approval or process that you started some time ago, and are you still willing to take this up and to continue on the process? And I was like, oh yes. And that's when again my aunts stepped in and they helped me find employers who would take that petition, because again at that time, at that point in time, the recruitment was already, I guess it's either they dissolved either bankruptcy or something to this effect. But anyway, they disappeared. They said that you could continue with the visa process, but you just have to find your own petitioners. And that's when my aunt stepped in to help. Really, I can't remember what the whole process was, but around 2015, early 2015, I was already getting to the process of me being interviewed, all the medical examinations and so on. And by November 2015, I was on my way here.
All right. So how long did it take me from your application from submission of application to your departure from the Philippines? How many years was that?
Really, it was around close to 11 years, but it's supposed to have been just a few years, just a couple of years, to be honest.
If it had not been for retrogression.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If it had not been for that, it would have been like around 2 years.
Okay, so you arrived in California, and what did you do? Did you have to wait? Did you get right down to work?
No, I had to wait for a few months. That was like November, because April was the time that I got my license, because I still had to file for, I still had some, you know, a little bit of paperwork here and there to take care of, like my social security, my actual license, because I was practicing in California and it's a whole different thing. It's a little harder, I was told, as compared to other states where it's easier to file for all your reciprocities and all that.
Wait a minute. So you arrived in Los Angeles, or was it Los Angeles your first stop?
Yes.
Okay, so you arrived in Los Angeles. What visa did you have that time?
It was already immigrant at the time that I came in.
Oh, that fast, mm-hmm. huh? You didn't even go through the work permit process anymore.
Not anymore. But then again, there are some recruiters in the Philippines too who would still, you know, get you for a work visa, and that would be a different route altogether. I think that that
was. Uh-huh. So you could actually do that, though, apply for an immigrant visa right away.
Yes. I think it's a kind of visa that's like for skilled workers. That's what I got.
All right. Uh-huh.
But I don't know if they still offer it now.
You're like an entertainment superstar who goes there because of his special skills.
Yes. What can I say?
All right. Okay, so you arrived there. You had to fix your papers and everything. How long did it take before you got down to business and started working?
It was probably around 4 months.
4 months, okay.
4 to 5 months.
So you were being supported by your aunts and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I now, took a trip to Sacramento with mm-hmm. my other aunts, and that was fun.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, because my sister took up nursing, but she never really got around to practicing it. But mm-hmm. her, a lot of her friends are there in the United States right now. And, mm-hmm. Of course, everybody, it's common knowledge. If you're a nurse or if you're a healthcare professional in the United States, you must be earning big bucks. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, true or false?
It's true. It's a lot better. The pay is mm-hmm. always a lot better
compared to the Philippines.
Yeah, definitely. It's. Mm-hmm. I think it's really above average, because I know that the minimum wage here is $15 per hour, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if they've mm-hmm. increased it. And I am just say ways past that. But still, it does require a lot of work, even if you are being paid the big bucks. It is mm-hmm. very exhausting at times. You know, you just go home and you'd like, I just don't want to do anything. Mm-hmm. I just want to sleep.
But I got to talk to a nurse way, way back, and she was telling me one of the major reasons why they were earning a lot was because they were working in two hospitals. Is that possible? Like she was telling me, she worked full-time, that's 3 times a week in one hospital, and then 3 times a week in another hospital. So her only rest day is one day in a week. Is that possible, and is that true? You can work in two hospitals simultaneously?
I think that that is true for a lot of nurses. The only reason, to be honest, that I don't do that is that I'm a surgery nurse. Surgery, mm-hmm. we are asked to be at work for 5 days a week.
It's a more regular thing compared to what the others have.
Yep. The others would usually have 12-hour shifts, which is a lot nicer, to be honest, I guess. But
really?
I also can't imagine that if you're a surgery nurse and you're there 12 hours, might be a lot tougher. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I see. So it's really possible to earn the big bucks, especially if you have, you know, if you work your butt off, so to speak.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you're flexible to be in so many places at once, there's a lot of opportunities for nurses for you mm-hmm. to work, especially on some places where they require you, where they allow you to be there part-time or per diem. Mm-hmm. You will really earn a lot.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of nurses also, not only nurses, but PTs and stuff, who mm-hmm. travel from one place to another. I think they're called consulting nurses or something, or family nurses. Is there such a thing?
There is such a thing. You have, well, I guess one of the things that you're talking about is home health nursing, where nurses would visit the patients who have been discharged from the hospital. And you just have to do like follow-up care on them until they mm-hmm. are back to their, should we say, baseline, like that they could already take care of themselves and they could do mm-hmm. a lot of things by themselves. So that's one. Another one is hospice.
So they go directly to you.
Yep, they go directly to the patients. And then there's also uh-huh. travel nursing, which is a lot different, George. And these assignments, they pay a huge amount of money. If you're a travel mm-hmm. nurse, which means like you belong to a certain company. And if there are some hospitals that need additional hand, if they suddenly have, like, I don't know, layoffs or resignations, and they can't meet the headcount, they send traveler nurses there. And
my goodness, there is such a thing, huh?
Yeah, they earn a lot of money. I swear to you, it's like, aside from the base pay, which I think that some of them would earn like $2,500 to $4,000 a week. I'm talking about a week.
Wow.
Plus, they get to have, what do you call that again? Housing allowances. The company still pays for their housing. I'm like, well, that's a lot.
That's a medical version, probably, of the Ghostbusters or stuff. Like you go from one place to another. Very nice, right?
Exactly.
And nurses here in the Philippines can actually look forward to doing that. Is there any special qualification for you to get into that?
For travel nursing? No, you just have to have a lot of experience and you have to be willing to travel. Personally, I haven't done that and I don't know if I would like to do that, even if they pay a lot. I still like to have a place I call home, like a home hospital.
And right now, what does your day look like? Like your ordinary Pia de Hungria day?
Well, I wake up around closer to 6 so that I can be at work at 6:45 or 6:30, depending on what case I'd be doing.
You wake up at 6 and you're going to be at work at 6:45. Isn't that cushy? I mean, you know, here in the Philippines, you wake up at 4 and then you get to work at 9.
Hey, I drive fast, but don't tell anyone.
So you wake up at before 6, be at the hospital at 6:45. And how long does your day take?
It's really 8 hours. We are supposed to have like a 30-minute lunch break and 2 15-minute breaks, and that's about it. But I do anything from 3 to 4 cases a day. By cases, I mean surgeries. They could range from minor to major surgeries, including, of course, some emergencies, which is what we usually could be called about. Like in the middle of the night, you could be called for an emergency or they need a second team to help with surgery. That's where we come into.
So you're like a trauma nurse?
No, it's not trauma. Our the hospital that I work at is a level, I don't know, level 2 levels. I'm not very sure. But we don't have traumas. We only have, well, you know, your occasional emergent cases, such as a stroke patient who had a brain bleed.
No violent incidents like gunshot wounds or stuff.
No, unless of course it's like the nearest hospital and they couldn't do anything. We just have to accept them. But no, I have not experienced that. I have not had anyone on my OR bed that has a knife sticking out of his chest yet. That would be interesting, right?
Yeah, you should come back here to the Philippines. There's a lot of that here going on.
No, but when I was in nursing school, that happened ish.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, going back to your original, the first thing you said, that communication skills would probably be the what you might call your advantage, right? Now, how do they get that kind of communication skill that Pia de Hungria has right now?
Gee, it really is about practice. And a very important thing is for them to not be shy in using the language. A lot of Filipinos have this, I guess, this notion that English is the enemy, that English is for the socialites, for the for those who have the bourgeois. I don't know. I don't know why they think that way. I don't know why I thought that way, to be honest. It's like one of the things that I used to think. But it really is important. If you start looking at English as a tool for you to be able to provide quality patient care, then it's something that you should start being more proficient in. It's not just an enemy. And I also hope, you know, that some way, somehow, No. A lot of the nursing schools in the Philippines would start being more strict about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I say strict, but would start implementing it more and maybe a little bit on cultural training too, because yes. It really would give us an edge. It's not just like we already are very good at providing patient care. We really are very compassionate. And I think that equipping the people, equipping the student nurses, future nurses with language and cultural knowledge, then it would be like the perfect combo and you'd have the nurses, more and more Filipino nurses.
Very nice. And, you know, I guess one of the big problems here is, you know, you grew up with Falcon Crest and whatever, right? Those American series we used to have in, I think Channel 7 used to show that. But right now, we rarely see English programs in the Philippines unless you go to cable. Because even English programs are now being dubbed in Filipino. And there lies the problem, of course. Like, where do they get their source or their daily diet of English? And what would you advise them in the absence of free television?
Listen to Masterclass. Hey!
Listen to Masterclass. Okay, that's an endorsement. Thank you very much. I'll have it recorded and played everywhere. Thank you very much for that endorsement. But, you know, it really is very important. And there's one thing that came to mind. What about assertiveness, Pia?
That is true, too. It's very important. I think that assertiveness is, to be honest, something that I still am perfecting. A lot of instances, and I would tell my best friend about it, that at times that I would like to say something, I kind of hold back just because, you know, that little kid that my grandmother raised would say, you don't speak that way to people who are older than you are. You know, it kind of still holds me back sometimes, but assertiveness is really, really important. Otherwise, you just won't be able to survive. You just won't be able to protect your license to the best of your ability if you don't do anything. If you don't speak up, you won't be able to protect your patients if you don't speak up. And you're right about that. Assertiveness is something that a lot of people, a lot of Filipinos need to improve on just because we are raised to be like the meek, submissive culture.
Yes. So that's where culture training comes to fore, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Very nice.
I really think that, well, there's YouTube too, by the way, just, you know, going back to what you were saying, there's YouTube. I'm sure that a lot of people would still have access to a lot of English programs that they could listen to. I think it's really a conscious effort for a lot of people to do that.
And it's not colonial mentality at all. It's just surviving, you know, in a place where you're not familiar with. Communication is still the key. Okay. Mm-hmm. Pia, I guess we don't have much time. Imagine, I never realized we've been talking for about 30 minutes already.
I know.
So this has been fun. Maybe we could have this all over again, and maybe you could guest together with our guest last week, Gina. This could be a lively discussion. Sure. Might take us about 2 to 3 hours to do it, but hey.
I'm sure. In parts, it would be great.
Mm-hmm. As long as it's an interesting discussion, why not? Anyway, Pia, thank you very much for joining me today. And hopefully the healthcare professionals in the Philippines would be able to get some tips from whatever we discussed today. And to all of you listeners out there, if you have any topics that you'd like me to discuss, all you have to do is email me at george@cutprintproductions.com. That's george@cutprintproductions.com. Until the next episode of Masterclass, I'd like to thank all of you for joining us. Good night and God bless. Stay safe and sane. Ad Maiorem Dei Gloriam. This show is produced by Cutprint Podcast Network and George Boone. Executive producer, Patsy Ferrer. Writer, George Mercado. Creative director, Christine Alido. Social media manager, Nia Escondo. Sound engineer, MJ Habal. Researcher, Lee Malcolm. To advertise, email us at podcast@cutprintproductions.com or call us at 0918-807-8478. That's 0918-807-8478.